Now we're ready for the director's report. Director Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, everyone that's joined us here this morning. We have a big couple of days ahead of us, so I'm going to make my report relatively brief this morning, just hitting on a variety of topics to kind of catch you up on some of the things that not only I but department staff have been involved in since we met last in November. First is, you've heard us talk about our conservation initiative, and linked to that conservation initiative, we held a leadership training for all our senior staff members this week. Our senior staff members include our executive management teams, our assistant directors, regional directors, deputy assistant directors. It also includes our division managers and each one of our five programs, as well as our regional program managers from each one of the regions. Our goals of this training included helping develop the skills necessary to hold others and ourselves accountable for outcomes and behavior, to improve our ability to build strong relationships with groups and individuals with diverse perspectives, and to achieve continuous improvements by making the use of what we call lean to become more efficient and effective in what we do. We had about 80 people attend. We were really fortunate. We had two individuals come up from San Francisco and lead and the discussion, and it was, I think, very well received by our senior staff, and it is kind of a first step in that direction relative to helping provide additional training to our senior staff relative to leadership. Next item is on November 19th, Governor Gregoire came and visited our agency. We had probably close to 200 DFW staff members come to that meeting, and she primarily focused on expressing her thanks for the work that we do and for helping to make her tenure as governor a successful one, and she provided us this proclamation that I've handed around indicating her support and appreciation of all the work that we do. So it was a very, very nice event. We really appreciated having her there, and she was open to taking questions, and we had a pretty good exchange and dialogue with her that day. Wouldn't want to leave you with the impression that we're the only agency she's doing that with. She's also making the rounds and visiting other agencies as well. Last week, the FISH program held a workshop with our coastal interests to discuss the coho mark selective fisheries in the ocean, including a discussion about hatchery production changes, where we've seen a pretty dramatic decline in coho smolt releases over the last decade, changes in or an evaluation, an examination of the mark rates in our hatchery fish, so to the degree to each hatchery, the proportion of the fish that are marked. We also looked at the change in the production in terms of the release in the Columbia River system below Bonneville Dam versus above Bonneville Dam, where we've seen an increase and a shift in production to above Bonneville Dam. We looked at adult survival rates, where not unlike other areas in the state, we've seen a decline in the productivity of the fish that we're releasing. And then we also looked at the change in the mark rates that have been observed in the fisheries and how those have been declining in recent years, and just the overall lack of success, particularly in the recreational fishery, in coho fisheries, Nia Bay, LaPush, Westport, and the Columbia River area. We had a good cross-section of stakeholders there, and we took away from that some assignments that we're going to be working on, but it was, I thought we had a good session. Change in subjects again, Jim Scott and I joined some Region 4 staff in a meeting with the Muckleshoot Tribe as part of our continued efforts to develop a MOU between ourselves and the Muckleshoot Tribe that address hatchery production commitments, the lease of Palmer Ponds to the tribe, and the potential for mark selective Chinook fisheries in Elliott Bay, which has been an issue that we've been discussing without much success with the Muckleshoot Tribe for a number of years. I did want to call out the efforts of the Region 4 staff that have made a great progress in developing and completing our hatchery genetic management plan for the hatchery facilities on the green. Those completion of those HGMPs are also a really important fit with our efforts associated with renewing our Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan. So while we haven't achieved success yet in the MOU, we continue to make progress, and we actually have language in this MOU relative to the implementation of mark selective fisheries in Elliott Bay under certain run size conditions that we're discussing. As we had an issue at our last commission meeting dealing with the giant Pacific octopus that was taken off Alki Point, we're continuing to develop our response to that issue. And I wanted you to know that we've had some very generous offers, one from Bob Davis that leads the Seattle Aquarium, and another one from Sue Colleter from the Vulcan Foundation. She happens to be Paul Allen's sister, who just came to see us and offered their help in any way that they could to help assist us with that process. So we're developing the process, which will include an ad hoc advisory group. I'll have some more details on that for you in January. But I did have a chance to talk with Bob Davis when I was up at a function at the Seattle Aquarium here a couple of weeks ago, and then he gave me a call several days later. So just very, very generous and gracious in their offers to assist us with that. Some of you, maybe all of you, are aware that we have a treaty with Canada regarding albacore. 2012 marked the first year that we haven't had a reciprocal agreement with Canada that allows a specified number of Canadian vessels to fish within 200 miles within our exclusive economic zone, and conversely provides a number of U.S. vessels being able to fish in the Canadian exclusive economic zone. The lack of having that reciprocal fishery regime, and I'm using the term fishery regime, which is a component of the treaty, came as a result of the failure of the two countries to negotiate a new regime last year. Governor Gregoire has last spring engaged in this issue to a degree. A bilateral meeting was attempting to be scheduled for mid-January, however those attempts have failed. And at this point, even before, there was very little support within the U.S. harvesting sectors to renegotiate a new fishing regime. And whatever level of support there was in May has all but disappeared. There was some support from the Washington Trawlers Association in particular to try to negotiate a new fishery regime. That organization recently came out against negotiating a new fishing regime. So I'm becoming more and more doubtful that a new regime will be negotiated for 2013. Remains to be seen whether the larger issues associated with the relationship between the United States and Canada on a variety of other fishery fronts, from whiting to salmon to halibut, will cause the State Department to take a position where some type of reciprocal fishing regime is ultimately agreed to between the two countries. But at this point in time, progress is stalled, I guess I would say. And then speaking of halibut, the International Halibut Commission held their early winter meeting in late November. While no final decisions have been made, preliminary indications are that the Area 2A quota, so the area from U.S.-Canada border south along Washington, Oregon, and Northern California, will be reduced by a significant amount from what it was in, really, what it has been for the last 7 or 8 years. Again, emphasizing that the final decision won't be made by the commission until they hold their annual meeting in the third week of January. That meeting is going to be held in Victoria. Last year it was held up in Alaska. We chose not to go to that primarily because of budget reasons, and I'm still deliberating as whether or not we'll try to go to Victoria. It's probably $1,500 to $2,000 cost to send a representative there. The tribes, the coastal tribes, well, coastal and northern Puget Sound tribes often take an active role and have been taking more and more an active role in the commission process, as well as the Pacific Fishery Management Council also has representation there. So we'll continue to evaluate that.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said they're predicting a reduced harvest rate. You didn't offer any kind of a percentage range. 10%, 30%, what sort of reduction do you think that we're looking at?
I will
recognize it won't be finalized until next month.
We've been in the 900,000 to 1 million pounds of quota for Area 2A in the last decade, and the numbers that they were tossing around were in the 700,000 to 750,000 pounds. So 25% reduction or so is what was being discussed. Now, that wasn't, they are changing the manner in which the staff is presenting decisions to the commission, aligning more like what we have done in the Pacific Council, where you essentially have a risk matrix that if you make certain assumptions about the productivity, that if you want to have a neutral risk, the number would be this. If you want to take some more risk, assuming some other maybe higher productivity assumptions, then you could go as high as this and so forth. So whereas in previous years the Halibut Commission staff has made a recommendation, specific numeric recommendation for each one of the management areas to the commission, they're not doing that this year. They're offering this decision matrix that's based on risk. And so the numbers I just recited in terms of the 7 to 750 is off the neutral risk kind of alternative that was presented. So again, don't want any newspaper articles or anything quoting us as saying that they're going to go to 700 or 750. But if you look at the information that was provided to the Halibut Commission by their staff, it was fairly easy to conclude that there's a probability that the quotas will be reduced, and perhaps by a significant amount.
Thank you.
Next to the last item is Our coastal crab fishery has been delayed, and it's been delayed in all three states, Oregon and California as well, due to poor crab quality. We start our crab quality testing the third week of October or so, and we've conducted three different tests. We have some pretty crab in relatively good condition from Grace Harbor North. Farther north you go, better condition it gets. As you go down off Long Beach and down off the Columbia River, the condition of the crab is not as good. And to give you some perspective, our threshold that we have defined in our tri-state agreement with the other three states is for Washington and north of Cape Falcon is we need to meet a meat pickout rate of 23%. We're projecting that for particularly Long Beach and off the Columbia River, we won't get to 23% until about December 28th. Crab is in pretty good condition from Cape Falcon south down to the southern part of Oregon, and then in California, they also have some poor condition and estimates of not reaching, they have a 25% minimum threshold there of not meeting that until around the first of the year. So we have had a three-state conference call this week and made, I think it was Monday, made the decision to delay. By statute, the California, if they do a delay, they have to do it in two-week increments. And so that made an automatic delay until actually December 31st is when it would open. We've completed our negotiations with the Macaw Tribe and the Quileute Tribe, but we haven't completed our negotiations with Quinault Indian Nation. And the crab condition issue and when they started is really complicating how we go about determining the amount of number of days in terms of head start that we provide the Quinault Indian Nation to meet our obligation for 50-50 sharing. So there's several things that are left up in the air right now relative to that very important commercial fishery. And then turning to activities associated with our Wolf Conservation Management Plan. Let me start out with some highlights on some of our field activities. November 26, two collared wolves that were collared in Oregon in the area just in the Blue Mountain area. Traveled into portions of the Walla Walla County, Columbia County, and Garfield counties. They estimate there's about 10 members of this pack, and that's an estimate that comes from Oregon. The pack's range thus far has been just south of the Washington-Oregon border. These two animals have traveled back and forth across the border several times here the last couple of weeks. And we continue to work with Oregon and get information from them on the movement of these two particular animals. Back to the wedge. In early November, our enforcement officer, Don Weatherman, confirmed two sets of wolf tracks in the wedge. They've also been observed in recent weeks by several members of the public, including operators at the Diamond M. We don't obviously know the origin of these wolves, but it's certainly not a surprise that we have wolves back in this area, given the proximity to three other wolf packs that are certainly well within the range of wolves. We're going to continue to monitor the area to gain as much information as we can about recolonization. We're also planning a wolf helicopter capture effort this winter. If conditions are favorable and we have, which means we've got fresh wolf sign and semi-open habitat in the wedge, we're going to be attempting to capture wolves there as well as other areas. We're also doing, as part of implementation of our conservation management plan, we have two of our biologists currently conducting aerial surveys of our wolf packs, estimating pack size and pup survival. We're going to replicate those surveys that are being conducted for most packs, and our preliminary estimates of pack size and successful breeding pairs should be available in January of 2013. Those will be preliminary with our final report in March. In terms of updates on wolf-livestock interactions, we've responded to 5 reported wolf depredations since October 1 of 2012. We had 3 reports of wolves killing livestock, cattle. And following an investigation, in each case, wolves were either determined to not be involved or the cause of death was unknown. We had a single chicken was lost due to an unknown predator. And we also had an injury to a dog determined to be unknown, but that was likely attacked by another dog. And then more recently, just within the last couple of days, there's been a report of a dog being attacked down in the Blue Mountains area. And I don't have information about the investigation on that piece, but we are looking into that. In terms of management activities, the wildlife program conducted 3 wolf training workshops at their internal wildlife program school here the last week of November. Those workshops focused on basic wolf biology and ecology, the use of non-lethal tools to address wolf and livestock interactions, livestock depredation investigations. We were fortunate to have Seth Wilson from the Blackfoot Challenge come over and help us with that training on specifically on non-lethal tools. And we also had Mike Jimenez from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service presented the livestock depredation training. We've also been working on 2 different types of agreements with livestock operators to help enhance the use of non-lethal tools to minimize wolf-livestock conflict. One is what we call a wolf proactive checklist agreement, which is a list of non-lethal tools a producer agrees to enact prior to being considered for lethal management options, if those are needed. And the other one has that those elements, but also includes options for cost share of funds to assist for things like fencing and range riders, or compensation for livestock impacts beyond what the plan currently identifies. So if there's a way to determine livestock losses, that maybe we don't have a carcass as evidence, but we have a history of records of loss, and we have an escalation in those losses, to what extent can that database be used to compensate a livestock operator? We've also been, as Commissioner Perry indicated, out on the road a lot, engaging with a variety of constituents on wolf management. Myself and Nate Pamplin went over to Spokane and met with folks from the Stevens County Cattlemen's Association, Cattle Producers of Washington, Stevens County and Okanagan County Farm Bureau to discuss working relationships and opportunities to improve those relationships. That was on a Thursday or a Friday, and then the following Tuesday, myself along with Dave Ware and Steve Pizangra went up. We were invited to attend the Stevens County Cattlemen's Association's annual meeting in Colville and present information on specific questions that they asked us to address in a presentation. And following that, then there was a semi-facilitated dialogue between Dave Ware and myself and the audience that was there, and there were 75, 80, 90 people there or so, and Commissioner Perry, as he mentioned, was there, as was Commissioner Dubia. So I thought, a good interaction. And then Dave Ware and Donnie Martorello have met with representatives of Conservation Northwest, Humane Society, Wolf Haven to discuss livestock cooperative agreements and wildlife conflict rules. Steve Pizangra presented information at the Wolf on Our Plan to a group of Spokane area sheep producers at the annual Sheep Shepherds Information Day. Dave Ware also met with livestock operators in Klickitat County to discuss wolf conservation and management and livestock cooperative agreements. Nate and Dave also, we had a meeting of the Game Management Advisory Council where wolf issues were actively discussed. I think Commissioner Perry mentioned the Conservation Northwest hosting the public viewings of the BBC Wolf film, Land of the Lost, and we had staff participating or attending those functions. And Jay Shepard, our biologist from up in Colville, and Officer Don Weatherman from up in that area, as well as Sergeant Mike Sharon, attended a range rider meeting with the Dawson family, Conservation Northwest, and U.S. Forest Service staff. And that purpose of that meeting was to review the pros and cons of the range rider program conducted this past summer on the Dawson Ranch. And they also discussed necessary improvements for next year's grazing session. And then just the last two things. I think you're aware the Colville tribe recently announced their wolf management harvest plan and implemented a wolf hunt. They have divided, it's all on reservation. They divided it up into four areas. And they issued three permits for each one of three of those regions and no permits for the fourth region. Their stated purpose of the hunt was to curb growth of the wolf population and to protect deer and elk populations. Obviously, we're recognize and respect the tribal sovereignty and authority to conduct this hunt on their reservation. And then the Spokane tribe also released a statement here just on Wednesday confirming an incidental take of a gray wolf on their reservation that occurred on Monday, December 10th. Again, it occurred within the boundaries of the reservation. We believe it to be a member of the Huckleberry Pack, and they also indicated that they're completing an internal process and reviewing a draft wolf management plan for the Spokane tribe on reservation. So that's a quick overview of activities associated with wolves. And then the other piece is we've been doing a lot of work with legislators. Committee week was the last week in November, so we had a lot of the legislators in town. We've been making, Larson and Bruce Bjork have been making good progress on our agency request legislation in terms of getting signatures from the right people. And so we're trying to prepare ourselves for a successful legislative session as well.
Thank you. Commissioner Perry has first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one question. Does the Colville's wolf management, including their nine hunting permits, does that include the north half or just the reservation area itself?
It's confined on reservation, so it does not include the north half.
Thank you.
Commissioner Kenney.
Thank you. It was just one other update. Steve Pizangra and Dave Ware, Conservation Northwest, Seth Wilson, who else? Washington Cattlemen's Association, Stevens County Cattlemen's Association, NRCS, and John Dawson were all asked to serve on separate panels at the Washington Association of Conservation District annual meeting. And conservation districts, I think, are going to be a very valuable organization across the state to help get into the process of living with wolves. And that's what they asked those both those panels to do, was kind of talk about wolves in the context of how conservation districts could become involved and help producers. So I think the staff did a great job on those panels, and it was a very successful exchange of information. And one segment was on the agreements with the Washington Association of Cattlemen, very much in favor of those, and the Stevens County Cattlemen not so much in favor of those, but there was a good discussion. So that was a really, I think, a good meeting.
Looks like I have an opportunity to ask a question that came to my mind in reading the December 12th Wolf Update memo from Steve. I think it's page 2. It's not numbered, but it focuses on the collaring activities. And it says, capture activities will focus on packs that currently have a functioning collar to supplement the number of collars in each pack. If time allows and fresh wolf activity is observed, collars may also be deployed in packs currently without radio collared animals. So priority is being given to putting more collars on existing packs that already have a collared animal. And I read that and I thought, isn't it a higher priority to get collars on packs that we don't have collared animals in?
Why don't I, if with your permission, ask Donnie Mortarello to come up and speak to that. Okay. Thanks, Donnie.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Yes, it's a matter of just the expense of the operation and having a helicopter and a spotter plane and all those kinds of things, that if we don't have fresh activity and some hot sign in an area where we don't have a collar, we could spend a lot of money really quick and not have any success. And so that's why one of the first things we can do is get to a pack where we have a single collar. In a couple cases, it's one VHF collar. And we know we can go find those animals and very quickly put a collar out and then still have time to follow up on these other areas that they don't have any collars out. So it really just depends on if we see fresh wolf activity.
Okay. Okay, that helps me understand a little bit, but it seems to me that one of the strong advantages we have nowadays is the ability to know where the packs are. And that helps in a variety of ways. It also keeps our counting more accurate. And, of course, we've been subject to a lot of criticism among people of Northeast and Eastern Washington in general that we're kind of far behind the curve in terms of knowing how many wolves there are. So I think there's been a conversation about potentially diverting some of the compensation money that's not of interest to the cattlemen to this kind of an activity and catch up a bit. Dr. Anderson?
Well, I think the point here is not so much that it's how we go about getting callers on packs where we don't have reliable evidence that we know about where they are. So we're going to use trapping techniques to get at those, to get an initial collar on. This is about using expensive aerial means of getting additional collars on packs that we already have a collar on. So it's not that we're ignoring getting collars on the packs that we don't have currently, but we're using far less expensive methods to do that, to get an initial collar on those packs. And then once we have it, the aerial technique becomes much more viable and cost effective. So we found ourselves, frankly, in a, that would have, it would have been a great thing if we would have had, for example, a collar on a second animal in the wedge pack this year. That would have been helpful. Because the one that we did have was on the alpha male. And so it's about prioritizing the use of that tool on packs where we already have a collar, not that we're don't have a priority on getting the balance of the packs where we don't have a collar collared.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That logic makes great sense to me. Once we get that first collar on, we have an investment in that pack, and technology fails, and it makes so much sense to me to get a second or third collar on the pack so that we have some redundancy, because as you pointed out, once we don't know where they are, it's very expensive to locate them for a quick recapture using aerial approach. So that makes good sense to me.
Okay. Commissioner Kenney?
Madam Chair, thank you. Another element I think Donnie was hitting on it is, for instance, the Smack Out pack had GPS collars, which are also can be used with a VHF wand. And the range rider this summer relied extensively on the telemetry data from the GPS information every morning and sometimes every night. And it was very valuable to that effort, knowing where the wolves were in relation to groups of cattle. The VHF signal, she also had a wand, was intermittently valuable. She said it's just you have to be in such direct line of sight that it's very hard to use as an accurate tool. And so those wolves that are collared with just VHF, at some point if they're starting to manage that and deal with whether they're depredating or not or preventing that, that GPS collar is going to be invaluable. It's incredibly valuable to those efforts.
I have one other question related to what's the latest word from Fish and Wildlife Service regarding when they're going to issue their proposal on listing?
Sometime after the first of the year.
After the first of the year.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Every time I think I have a degree of confidence that I know about when it's going to come and I say it, then it gets put off. So, but they indicated to us that it would be after the election, close to the end of the year, maybe right after the first of the year. But so hopefully sometime in the next 30 to 45 days it is the best guess I have, and that's what it is as a guess.
Do we know who's going to be the new Secretary of Interior?
I don't.
I've heard some names floated.
So have I.
People we know.
I'll be surprised.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thanks, Dr. Anderson. Commissioner Schmidt.
Actually, Chair, I did have a question. I wanted to wait for swift discussion to conclude. And one point on that, I hope that we now, with the GPS collars, give us a better real-time evaluation rather than the lag that we were having before. So that could be good news. Phil, I want to go back to your COHO meeting, because I see that as a looming, very large issue. At some point, we may even want to have a briefing on it. But you indicated that they noted stocking above Bonneville, and the Yakimas have taken on reintroducing coho all through north central Washington, in the Yakima River, the Wenatchee River, the White River, the Chihuahua, Nason Creek, the Methow, and so they're really involved. Were they a part of the meeting? If not, you may want to keep them well informed, because coho is now a big deal to them.
They were not part of the meeting. Frankly, this meeting came about as a request from the charter boat industries in Westport and Ilwaco. They Jim Scott and I had a chance to talk with him at the September council meeting, and where they expressed their, and I think this year kind of pushed Butch Smith over the edge because of the difficulties they had there in terms of their fishing success, and the number of people that were going fishing or going home with nothing, and they low mark rates, and just a lack of coho, which of course the Columbia River depends on coho in a big way and has for a long, long time. I mean, to give you just a sense, recreational catch, if you want to go back to the good old days, it was up in the 200,000 area. 2001 to 2005 was 132,000 was the average of those years, and in 2012 it was 33,000 fish. So there's just been this huge decline in this coho catch success rates. And if you look particularly at the Waco and Chinook area, the decline in the number of angler trips in July has just been astounding. The lack of participation there that aligns with the lack of success. But as we, the point, well, the issue of above Bonneville, we also under USV Oregon have the obligation to ensure that 50% of the production bound for above Bonneville Dam as it enters the river gets over Bonneville Dam. So as one of the tools to try to ensure that that happens, we haven't marked as high a rate at as high a rate of the hatchery production of those fish. So they're present in the marked selective fisheries, and so the it's also, there's been a, and we've had relatively strong wild fish. I mean, we had record predicted runs all along the coast this year in our wild production, yet the Columbia, particularly the Columbia River hatchery production, was estimated to be at a low level. So we've got these wild stocks going one way and the hatchery stocks going the other, and we're in a mark selective fishery, and so the mark rates go down, and it's the combination of all those factors is really, they're feeling it big time on the coast.
Commissioner Napier.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So, two points. One, I just want to echo the conversations about cholera, and I think that's really the number one priority. I think it's the key thing for living with wolves and keeping problems to a minimum, as well as leading to our best management practices, knowing where they are and what they're doing, and critical for our delisting process to get going. So I can't emphasize enough to prioritize that trapping and aerial, whatever we got to do. I think we're behind on that, and we need to catch up on that if we can this winter. The other thing I didn't know if it was going to be brought up, but I think we're progressing along on the perching in of the Caldwell hatchery, the buy-sell agreement. Can you give us an update on what our status is there?
Do you know anything about that?
Morning, Commissioners. Commissioner Duvia, as I understand it, we've had a series of positive conversations with the Stevens County Commissioners. There are some changes in commissioners with the election, and so we're transitioning from the past to the present, trying to get the new commissioners involved. We've recently completed the appraisal, and so we are in the process of putting together a sales agreement based on that appraisal, and things seem to be moving at a pace that would allow the educational programs and some of the planned activities to begin this spring. So it seems like it's moving along a good path and positive direction.
I think there is complete agreement on all sides to proceed with that, and we do have the changing of the guard on January 1st. Is there any possibility we can get that in concept put together and start closing before the end of the year, so the current commissioners that worked on it can get some credit for it, as well as I think January is the budgeting time for the school districts to start planning for their expenditures for next spring.
Commissioner Duvia, I don't believe we could get that done in the next 2 weeks, but as we're in conversations with the school district and with the, both sets of commissioners, and I think they're, you know, they're comfortable with that pace, so.
Commissioner Mencken?
Yeah, I'd like to go back to some comments that the director made regards coal. And it's interesting that the wild stocks are remaining in good condition with coal, but the hatchery stocks continue to decline. So my assumption there is that there's a change in the survival of the hatchery coho stocks. Would you be willing to venture a guess as to perhaps what the cause of that decline might be in our hatchery stocks?
Well, I think we have recently, through some work done, I believe by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, have a better understanding of the level of predation, particularly in the Columbia River, that's resulting from what I'll call the explosion in the population of double-crested cormorants. And I don't have the numbers right off the top of my head, but they're stunning. They're so large, the estimates. That, along with by creating islands in the Columbia from the result of dredge spoils being deposited, we've created islands that are now supporting the largest breeding populations of Caspian terns that we've ever seen. And essentially, where we had them dispersed in places like Grace Harbor in particular, the majority, and I don't want to try to assign a percentage to it off the top of my head, but we have a large segment of the Caspian tern population that's now in that area as well. And there's some documentation on the reliance on out-migrating juvenile salmonids from that population as well. You put that on top of the explosion and what I'll call the explosion in the harbor seal population over the course of the last 20 years, and I think we're producing a lot of fish now that once used to enter the ocean, a portion of which used to survive and become adults, that aren't making it to the ocean. And I think there are some, while it's not the single cause for sure, we're seeing a similar thing in Puget Sound where our survival rates, our adult production in our hatcheries, particularly for Chinook, have plummeted over the last decade. And some of the work that's being done by Long Live the Kings, Brian Riddle, we have some staff participating in looking at the causes for the early marine survival issues associated with steelhead and salmon in Puget Sound are pointing to the high population of harbor seals present in Puget Sound. So I suspect it is caused from a variety of factors, but if I had to look at one thing that's changed in a pretty significant way over the last 10 to 15 years, when I'm looking at the Columbia River, I think the population growth in those two species of birds that rely heavily on, are now seemingly heavily dependent on juvenile salmon for their food source is probably one of the significant contributors to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions for the director? Commissioner Smith.
Just to follow up, thank you. Has there been any dialogue about culling the cormorants?
Yes. Roy Elliker, my counterpart in Oregon, and I have had some good conversations, some frank conversations with Dan Ash, the director of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, at the WAFWA meeting. We are intending to meet with those representatives from the service at the upcoming winter meeting of WAFWA, but we are trying to pursue the ability to try to control that population in a way that provides for a healthy, sustainable population of those species of birds, but at the same time, not to the point where we have unacceptable consequences on our salmonid production.
Because that was done in the Upper Great Lakes, and significant culling.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Now we're ready for the next portion, effective performance management. Yair and W. Director Storr, are you going to introduce this topic?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, good morning, Commissioners. I don't have an operations report today. I'm anxiously awaiting the governor's budget, which will be the first of maybe four budgets to come out this session, and that's expected to be released, I think, next Tuesday, the 18th. So we'll have a report for you on that. Instead, what we thought we'd do is use about 15-20 minutes to meet a commission request. That was to provide you with some information about our performance management system. So Yair Rietsma is our performance manager, and he's going to lead you through an overview of what we do to monitor and report on how well we're doing.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Yair Rietsma, and I'm the performance and accountability manager, just like Joe said. Presentation, I'll keep it as short as you would like. And it was based on a request from Commissioner Jennings. Thank you, Commissioner Jennings, to speak to how we're doing as an organization. And so I, for today's presentation, I want to emphasize that we're looking at a way to continuously improve performance, and not at any point do we consider that the work is done to improve how we can operate and increase our effectiveness and efficiency. So that's what's indicated here. And the primary model for continually looking at that, you may very well be familiar with, is the PDCA model that was initially developed by Edward Deming. And so that involves the planning's a part of the cycle, doing the actual work, checking or measuring progress, and acting, which also can be translated as adjusting, learning. Did you do it right? Did you do it wrong? What needs to change? And so that model, PDCA, is normally data-driven. It is iterative, so you can see it keeps going. It doesn't necessarily have to be a lengthy process. PDCA can be used at different levels in the organization by people just to say they plan for an event, they did it, and then they see whether they were successful or not and learn from that. But it is a best practice for organizations to use this. So I'll speak to those different components in my next slides. And what I'll do is I'll give you sort of a current status based on the PDCA model where we're at, and speak to some next steps. So you'll see that on all four letters come through, current status and next steps. In terms of our current status of our planning efforts, we're in the process of developing a new strategic plan. Director's performance agreement specifically informed that planning process in terms of helping us identify where our strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats are at as an organization. And that strategic plan will be complemented by program business plans, which are sort of like operational plans that are linked to this strategic plan. But these program plans will be able to fully describe everything we do, whereas the strategic plan, you can imagine, doesn't describe all our activities. As a part of that process, we are developing measures of success or measures of progress that specifically are tied to our current priorities that are identified in those plans. The goals for the strategic plan that will also be represented in the business plans, the program plans, just a reminder, they come out of the director's performance agreement for this year. And in order to sort of create more concise statements around what that means, I developed this graphic to help us understand how things fit together, including our mission and vision, the four goals that help us accomplish our mission and vision. And you can see that here, all on the basis of conservation, which includes the management of human use of the resource, of course. The next steps in terms of our planning efforts is I'm working with public affairs to complete a working draft of the document that we can have in place that we can share hopefully either early January around that time with you as well. We'd like to keep this open as a working document for now until the session is completed as well as the business plans are completed. The programs are working on those plans and we anticipate completion around April 1st. That's no joke. Measures of success, as I stated, will be completed and included in those business plans. And the programs are really have an active role there in terms of identifying, you know, what that looks, what are those key measures. And then based on the development of and their work, we can choose specific indicators to tie to our strategic plan strategies. So how are we going to measure at the strategic plan level how we're successful in doing the work, doing our strategies? Well, we'll have indicators for that that can tell us whether we're doing that or not. In terms of the doing, I have recently this week finished an update on our priority actions under the director's performance agreement, and I think you will see a copy of that at a future date. So that is, you know, one of the priority actions, of course, are important in terms of our doing. Ongoing activities, though, of this department are, of course, the bulk of the work that's going on. And I wanted to introduce just the idea around what we're doing with lean and lean management. And if you are familiar with lean, or maybe you're not, lean is a method to work on creating efficient processes that keep the customer in mind and removing waste and having a focus on the value of our work. And lean in that sense can help improve performance, whether it's at the priority action level of the big things, the big priorities of the agency, as well as in ongoing activity in people's daily work that they do. So lean is comprehensive in that sense. Just, not going to spend any time on this, but here are the key principles of lean, how you are able to get the waste out of processes. And this is done on a statewide level in all government agencies. So lean is not unique to our agency. Next steps in terms of doing, I think we'll be looking in the next couple months at development of a new director's performance agreement. And even as we progress into the new year, you might hear more news from what is happening in terms of lean management and what we're doing with lean at the agency. In terms of checking, measuring, our current status is, as you might know, includes a reporting of budget measures to OFM. It includes reporting of GMAP measures to the governor's office, which is the governor's management accountability program. And in our existing strategic plan, we didn't have performance measures identified. And so there is no, in that sense, the current status doesn't include that kind of progress reporting. Just to give you a couple examples of what we present to the governor's office in the GMAP forum. This is an example around Puget Sound Hatchery broodstock management standards and whether we're meeting those standards or not. The red and yellow and green don't mean anything about whether they're good or bad. They're just the years. Red being 98 and then green the most recent. And you can see our progress there. And another slide around rockfish harvest, where we wanted to minimize the impact on rockfish. That's another, just a visual representation of the information we provide to the governor's office in terms of data. And you can see there that the target for rockfish harvest, it's almost, you can almost see it, I think it's 5,000 pounds. And we met that last year. You can see, compared to the 1980s, for example, the big shift in what has happened there in terms of conservation.
Well, in terms of harvest.
Harvest regime changes, yes, correct. So next steps, in terms of the performance measure reporting under the new governor, I think that we may see some changes there. We've seen historically changes in terms from when administrations change, but I'm not aware of any specific changes, so we might hear about that later. As well as I mentioned, the new performance measures that we will develop and be able to start to report on as a part of the new strategic plan and business plans. And also we will be able to do progress reporting on what we're doing with lean. So there are some next steps for you in terms of progress reporting. And then in terms of acting, adjusting, I think the question there is how have we changed in the last year? And just a couple reminders there. We have that new framework with the four goals that I showed you briefly. That is in place. That will be used both in all our planning efforts, kind of tying our planning efforts together from the director's performance agreement through the strategic plan down to the operational plans. We are investing in learning from how we can improve through lean. So that's both at a strategic and an operational level. And I would say, I think, you know, more work needs to be done. So we're still finding ways to pursue operational excellence in terms of how can we learn and how can we continue to improve. And next steps there, this is my final slide. I think there is a need to be able to respond to change more quickly. I think that's what we're striving for. Adaptability is key. Lean, I think, can help with that learning process and how to change, how to improve. EDCA, this model, is continuous as we pursue perfection, and that's the fifth principle of Lean. Though we never attain it, we'll never stop striving for that in order to improve our performance as an agency. So a very high level, but wanted you to give an update about what we're doing with Lean, some of our measures, and what is under development, and some milestones around what you can expect in the next 6 months. And I'll answer any questions if there are.
Great. Thank you. Very good. Questions? Commissioner Perry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think the slides were numbered, but it was the slide entitled Checking. And I think you covered some of what I had a question about. Setting performance measures, I think, are really important. Reporting them to various people, as you have listed here, is an important process too, but I think the more important use of those is internally for adaptive management to try to develop something that will more closely meet your goals. And unfortunately, that part, that checking part, seems to be left out often. You get down the road a ways, it's high priority when you make the plan, but as you get down the road, that sometimes disappears. And I think that's often the most critical part. You need to determine what you did and what the impact of that was relative to moving towards your goals. And I think you were trying to point that out as you went through that, but at least that was my understanding of it. And I hope that the evaluation of what was done, therefore having a basis to somehow make changes in management, is followed through on, because I think it can be really effective if you do that.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Perry. I think that's very true. I agree fully with what you said in terms of evaluating what you did. I think it's often a weakness in organizations, and people tend to move on again to either planning the next cycle or just keep doing what they're doing. And in emphasizing this model specifically, we definitely hope to take more steps to check how we're doing, whether what we're doing is seemingly effective, and if the data tells us that, make decisions based on that instead of continuing to do what we do always.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. This is good and helpful. I was going to make a similar comment to Commissioner Perry about the need for performance measures and the whole point of what we measure, we do. Mm-hmm. What we don't measure, we often don't do because nobody seems to ask about it. And so having performance measures in place lets us track progress and see if we're on course or off course. So you've already identified the need for that, and hopefully in our next strategic plan we'll be putting those in. The other is more of a editorial comment about, and going back to the reduced rockfish harvesting. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going back to using indicators for what we're trying to measure. And I think what our objective is to rebuild the rockfish stocks. And so this is an indirect fishing-based measure of that, but it doesn't really translate directly into the rebuilding. So I think as we look for performance measures, we want to make sure that we're picking ones that actually are discrete, can be measured, gives changes over time, trends and ratios, but it also relates to exactly what we're trying to measure. So what we've done in the past is said you can't keep rockfish anymore. You can catch them, but you have to let them go. And so the numbers look great from a harvest perspective, but really, if that behavior is helping us rebuild the population of rockfish, this metric doesn't show that. This shows that our rules and regulations have been effective in reducing what comes back to the dock. It doesn't necessarily reflect directly on what's happening to the population trends. So that's just an editorial comment about it's important important to pick the right indicator for measuring success.
Thank you, Commissioner Jennings. And though I'm no expert in rockfish management, I believe from past conversations that we've had a hard time getting at population estimates for rockfish. So that's sometimes a challenge to find the right indicator. And but one thing that was clear, I think, in part, and you've already addressed this, was that we did need to demonstrate that that harvest was reduced. It's probably not an ideal indicator still, but yeah, it just shows you the challenge of.
I mean, part of the reaction, because you, as we're talking about, you said this is a reflection of our conservation efforts. And I would say it's an indication of our management changes, I think, whether or not that's actually helping us rebuild the population. We haven't really been able to demonstrate yet, so didn't want to put too much. I just want to be careful about how we're phrasing what this data represents, and that was my main point.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, one of the things I think I've brought up in the past, just prefacing before I go into that, this looks so much better than what we were seeing when I first joined the commission. In those days, the strategic plan was close to meaningless. It was an exercise in thinking that had no impact in the operations of the agencies. So what I've been seeing in the last few years is much, much better. The way you've been integrating the discussions that we've had with the director in developing the performance expectations and then translating those into, or integrating those into the strategic planning, leading to business plans in the programs, that's great. Real step forward. The one piece that I think I've raised in the past is the translation of the business plans at the programmatic, the program level, into the work expectations of individual employees. And in addition to that, career development plans, so that we can allocate our human resources towards the things that are most important. Are we taking steps in that direction so that all of the programs have career development objectives for staff, so that if they don't have the skills to do the work that we hold most important, they can gain those skills and we redirect our people resources? Is that part of what we're doing too?
Yes, Madam Chair, actually it is. And part of the business plans, though at a high level still describing activities of the program, the programs will use those in different ways, depending on the needs of the program, to inform not only work plans, but specific what they call performance development plans for the coming year. Also, referencing Director Anderson's comments about the leadership training we had earlier this week, that is a part of a larger approach to improve our leadership, management, and supervision capabilities, which really help us to look at things such as career development, succession planning, and basically equipping and our current leaders as well as our future leaders in the organization. So I think we're looking at that and we're taking it serious in terms of how we can best do that.
Okay, great. And one other quick question. LEAN. What is LEAN? It's an acronym, right?
LEAN is not an acronym.
Oh, it's not an acronym.
LEAN was a term that was coined by a researcher out of MIT. And it was used along with lean manufacturing. So it goes back to the Toyota production system and well before then. But it was basically, they were trying to find a word, not an acronym, but a real word that would describe this way of making organizations more efficient. So that's where Lean comes from.
Okay, and Lean is implemented, and that's the expectation statewide for all state agencies that will adopt the Lean principles?
Yeah, the governor had issued an executive order at the end of 2011 requesting or stating that all agencies should implement one Lean project or more Lean projects. So last October, at the end of October, there was a Lean Transformation Conference held in Tacoma, organized by the governor's office, and 2,200 people from across Washington State government attended that conference to learn more about Lean. So lots of progress being made there, but yes, definitely something that she has encouraged all agencies to pick up and implement. And we also know that Governor-elect Inslee is a supportive of using Lean and has identified that in his campaign as well.
Do you think this is the last question. All of this is really encouraging to me, at least as far as our department goes, because I think we face in the world today, as we see it, a situation in which a sizable proportion of our residents of Washington, as well as the rest of the country, feel that government is inefficient. Government is the problem. Can't trust government. They just operate in a way that is out of, not under the same pressures that the private sector is. And so the efforts to which government is going now to improve its efficiency, demonstrate accountability to the public, is really important in turning around that very, very negative attitude that is developed about government. And I'm just kind of curious, does anyone get their minds wrapped around how you determine whether these measures are actually having a beneficial effect on efficiency and whether public attitudes towards government might be improving in light of all these efforts that we're going to?
I think that over time, there should be a demonstrable effect of implementing Lean within state government. And there's a couple reasons for that, I believe. Not only do you see that when frontline staff, who Lean considers the experts, are engaged with really thinking about what people want, what our mandate is, and how can we best deliver service to the citizens, that employee morale goes up, and overall service delivery improves, and people, I think, will see that government can be, over time, be more responsive to their needs. So this is not the first time Lean has been implemented. It's Toyota has a 70-year history, and it has gone across industries, including healthcare. There's examples in Washington, such as Virginia Mason Medical Center and Seattle Children's Hospital, who've proven that that this can be very effective to help on all kinds of fronts. So I'm hopeful as well.
Good. Okay. Anything else? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that completes the director's report. We are scheduled for a break, and we are right on time, 10:15, so let's come back at 10:30.